your daily dose of sports and fun. This is the Morning Drive Podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
I'm Mike Hebert, owner of Cantex Roofing and Construction. Every day is game day, and we'll get it right when it comes to your roofing, construction, windows, and mirrors. Call Cantex Roofing and Construction today. Together, we are one serving you.
Hey, good morning. With Jamie Lent and Jeff McGuire, I'm Chuck Hines. I saw this headline this morning. I'm like, oh, this is exciting. Maybe we can get this guy. The headline was, Final Four big man enters transfer portal. Would you like to know this Final Four big man's name?
DJ Burns.
Nope, it wasn't DJ Burns. Vlad Golden. Well, we've already had him.
Doesn't mean you can't have him again.
I guess not. Yeah. He spent the last 2 years at Florida Atlantic. they went to the Final Four. Actually, it's the last three because he was there 21-22, 22-23, and then 23-24. They went to the Final Four last year. Now, in defense of him and one other player that is transferring out of there, Nick Boyd, their coach is leaving. You know, is left to go to Michigan. So maybe they look at it as, Mel, maybe the new coach doesn't want me. But, I mean, 7-1, had a double-double in their game against Kansas State there in the tournament. But eventually they got bounced from the tournament. I would think that probably the new coach is going to look at him and go, 7-1, you had 39 blocks and field goal percentage of 55%, and rebounding almost 5 a game, started 106 games. Probably would want to have this guy. I'm guessing he's got one more year of eligibility. So he is free to move about the country.
Yes. Yeah, you wouldn't guess there'd be a bunch of Power Fives after him.
No. But, you know, maybe he feels like he can go somewhere else and expand his talents. 6:34 this morning here on the Morning Drive. I saw this yesterday, and I think this is a kind of a crazy story. On one hand, it's like I get it, but on the other hand, you can't walk away from your post. I don't know if you saw this or not, but the other day on Easter Sunday, UCLA and Arizona, well, actually it was on Saturday, UCLA and Arizona are playing on Saturday with Arizona winning 10-9 in 12 innings. They get a 2-run home run from Mason White. The game was televised on the Pac-12 network. However, when the game went to the 10th inning, the booth was empty. The broadcaster left the game. His name is Brian Weber. He noted that he had Easter plans. He thought he was going to have an analyst for the game, which ended up not being the case. He said, given that tomorrow is the most important day of the year in my faith, I was unwilling to miss my flight and miss the chance to attend a sunrise Easter service with my family. So he left. He just left the booth.
Okay.
And got on his flight. As the game went into the 7th inning, a guy from the Los Angeles Times noted that the booth seemed to be empty. He says on his tweet, on the Pac-12 network, for the UCLA-Arizona game, the announcers have either left the booth for a hot dog in the 10th or their microphones don't work. It's a mystery. Only crowd noise. They continued to show the game, but there wasn't any announcers. It's probably not going to work out well for him.
Probably not.
I mean, I understand kind of where you're going, but, man, dude, you got a job to do. And them's the break sometimes where it just doesn't work out that you can't just leave the game. You can't just get up and walk away. You can't. Maybe you should have just leaned into the crowd and go, hey, anybody want to do the game? I got a flight to catch. You know, it's like something.
Seems like this is something that needed to be worked out ahead of time.
You would have thought, right? Yeah.
If there are normal people involved.
Yeah, right. But yeah. This guy's a regular broadcaster, too. I mean, it's not like he's, you know, just some Johnny come lately. I mean, he's supposed to be a professional, but apparently not the case.
I don't think he'll be doing any games on the Pac-12 network anytime soon.
Well, I mean, it was going to come to an end anyway, right?
That's true. You know, that's a good point.
This is going to be the last one, but I mean, that is not good for the resume. What's your most epic game? Well, probably the game I got up and walked away from. This might drive you a little crazy. So we talked about this.
I wonder if he was just really angry about the fact that his color man didn't show, or they didn't have a color man for him to work with, or what.
Yeah, it sounded like the inside voices got in the way of making a sensible decision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I'll show them, by God.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to that Easter service, whether it's blah, blah, blah or not. You know, I get it. I understand, but... Them's the break sometimes. We talked about this with regard to Josh Young the other day, with him talking to the ESPN guys during the game.
Mm-hmm.
So during a game between the Dodgers and the Cardinals, they're talking to Kiki Hernandez. It's in the top of the third inning. They went to him for the in-game interview. He was covering third base during the interview. And they were asking him questions about different things. And then... all of a sudden, he turned up his pitch comm speaker in his ear, and there was a problem. He said, I need to turn my pitch comm higher. He said, I can't hear it with you guys, which meant the ESPN broadcasters. So then it got so loud that the pitch comm device, you could hear what was being said into Hernandez's ear with over the air. And so... They could hear them say, the person say, fastball away. Then the next pitch from Gavin Stone was a 95 mile an hour four seam fastball. And then it continued with changeup, fastball, fastball away, fastball in. And so he was tipping pitches. Now, it wasn't really helping the Cardinals because it was too quick. But I mean, you could hear what they were calling over the air.
Obviously, if the hitter could hear it or that was able to give it away, they probably would have done something about it and not allowed it to happen. But it was just that the broadcasters or the listeners could hear.
Yeah.
Your daily dose of sports and fun. This is the Morning Drive Podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
Time for this day in sports history. Usually I alert you when it's the final Tuesday of the month. This is the first Tuesday of the month. So instead of it being the final Tuesday, it's the first Tuesday of April.
Well, it's the second. It would be really difficult for it to be the second Tuesday of the month.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. So with this day in sports history, on this April the 2nd, here is Jeff McGuire.
1932 is where we will start. Tarzan the Ape Man released starting Olympic swimmer Johnny Westmuller. Is the first of his 12 Tarzan films.
There you go.
1962, Rami Brandon survived 7 walks and 2 wild pitches for the Texas Tech Red Raiders in their second no-hitter, 2-0 home win over Eastern New Mexico.
62,
yes.
Wow.
1976, Oakland Athletics trade 2 key members from their recent World Series championship team, sending Reggie Jackson and pitcher Ken Holtzman to the Baltimore Orioles in exchange for outfielders Don Baylor and pitchers Mike Tormez and Paul Mitchell. 1986, NCAA Basketball Rules Committee votes to adopt the 3-point shot beginning in the 1986-1987 season, setting college distance at 19 feet 9 inches compared to 21 feet in the NBA. 2006, Kyle Martin hits his 3rd home run in 2 games, and freshman Roger Kiznicki drives in 4 as Texas Tech upsets number 24 Baylor 14-1.
Roger Kiznicki?
Yeah, that's probably better. And in 2010, Jamadri Magruder gets four hits, four runs, and a home run, and a steal. And Texas Tech uses a seven-run third inning to beat Kansas State 13-4. It's National Peanut Butter Day. Excuse me, National Peanut Butter and Jelly Day.
Oh, okay.
Pedro Pascal is 49, Michael Fassbender is 47, and Clark Gregg is 62. And on this day in 1917, President Woodrow Wilson asks Congress to send U.S. troops into battle against Germany in World War I. In his address to Congress that day, Wilson lamented in it a fearful thing to lead his great peaceful people into war. 4 days later, Congress obliged and declared war on Germany. And that is this day in sports history.
All right, this day in sports history. Making quick work of it today. Yeah, that Reggie Jackson trade to Baltimore, it only lasted for a year. And then Jackson became a free agent and then signed with the Yankees the next year. So it was it was not a good trade for the Orioles. They gave up an awful lot. But at the end of the day, he was trying to avoid paying people. Later on that year, and I was double checking this to see if this was part of that. Later on in that season, Charlie Finley tried to sell Vita Blue to the Yankees, and Joe Rudy and Raleigh Fingers to the Red Sox. But that trade that was vetoed by Bowie Kuhn. That was his best interest in baseball quote.
Okay.
he was not able to do that. So it was one of those quotes that was like, oh, where'd that rule come from? Oh, it's just in the best interest of baseball that not take place. Those types of things not take place. 6:50 this morning here on the Morning Drive. I saw this. It's not sports related and it's not silly. It's serious. But I thought this was interesting to me, and I thought you guys might find it interesting. A gentleman by the name of Lou Conter passed away the other day. He is significant because he is the last survivor of the USS Arizona from the attack on Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941. He was 102 years old.
Wow.
No, crazy, right?
Uh-huh.
He was 20 years old that morning. He helped rescue fellow crewmen. He was one of 335 crew members of the USS Arizona who survived, and he outlived all of them. He would go on to fly combat missions in Korea and is also credited for creating the Navy's first SEER program, which stands for Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape. He was 102 years old and died of congestive heart failure. But what a life he lived in surviving that fateful day of December 7th, 1941. So I thought you guys would find that interesting. 6:52 this morning here on the Morning Drive. Remember the name Ben McCollum? We heard quite a bit about Ben McCollum last year about this time when Grant McCaslin was hired as the head coach of Texas Tech.
Yeah, we heard a lot about him.
Yeah, he was the head coach at Northwest Missouri State that he was going to, there was a lot of talk, conjecture, speculation, rumor that he was going to join Coach McCaslin with his staff. And he was a guy that won four Division II national championships. And now after 15 years and a record of 394-91, he is moving on, but he's going to take over the Drake job.
Okay.
Okay, so he will be the new head coach at Drake. That position came open because the Drake coach went to West Virginia, and he took his 6'7 son with him. Now, I don't know if Ben McCollum's got a 6'7 son that he can take to Drake with him, but probably not. Those things just don't grow on trees.
Yeah, don't know.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Anyway, Ben McCollum is the new head coach at Drake. Another coaching position was filled yesterday as Oklahoma State finally hires a head coach, and they have selected Steve Lutz from Western Kentucky. He has led his teams to three straight NCAA tournaments, but he just spent 1 year at Western Kentucky. They went 22-12. Coach Lutz is 51 years old. He previously was at Texas A&M Corpus Christi from 21 to 23. This deal is for 5 years. 69 and 35. This is not necessarily the splash hire, I think, that Oklahoma State was looking for.
Yeah, I don't know how much of a splash they were looking for or if they were just looking for a really good hire. I don't know that always the splash is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a guy that's won, no doubt about that. And he'll have better opportunity here with or there with the facilities. But at the same time, he's playing in a much tougher conference.
Yeah.
Might be easier to get to the tournament playing in a smaller conference like that.
Yeah. They were... I think they were hopeful of bringing in a little bit person with a little bit more name recognition or a little bit stouter resume. But
this is the Morning Drive podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
Morning Drive, thank you for being with us today on Lubbock Sports Station, Double T 97.3 and Double T 97.3.com. Red Raiders will take on Stanford again today. It's an 11:30. Broadcast time for us for the warm-up show and high noon for first pitch between Texas Tech and the Stanford Cardinal. Did any of the players, like any of the reserve guys, put on the tree uniform last night, you know, for their mascot?
Yep.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Wow. Really? Seriously?
Yeah, the guy coaching third base was wearing it.
Well, he was wearing it? Yeah, yeah. Okay. See, I would be pretty easy to get as an April Fool's joke kind of guy. Not the one putting it on, but the one that you could put it on me probably pretty easily.
I almost did one to Jamie yesterday at 5:30.
Yeah?
Little peek behind the curtain. I text Jamie every game and let him know that the game's on the app and on air so that he doesn't have to worry about it. That is taken care of. It's off his plate. Well, the game was supposed to start 6 yesterday, which it did. As it's supposed to. I almost texted him at 5:30. Learfield Music's on the air just waiting for you guys to get on the broadcast. We'll be good to go.
Wouldn't have been funny.
Yeah. Man, I was wondering if you're going to have a little rain. I was on my way home listening to the pregame, and it was raining on the Marsha Sharp, and you know, the weather off to the west looked pretty good, although there was a cloud or two. But I was wondering, because it just like when I got onto the flyover there to get onto the loop from the Marsha Sharp, looking back to the east, and it's like, man, that cloud is just over Dan Law Field at Rip Griffin Park. You go, man, those guys just can't get a break.
But, it was pretty miserable weather when we first got there.
Mm-hmm. And then
cleared up, and it was nice.
The sun came out for a little while, right? And then
long while.
And then it went down like it does every day.
Like it normally does.
Every day.
Has a tendency to do that.
Has a tendency to do that. It's going to disappear completely here later on in the week with the eclipse, but not here, unfortunately. I don't know how much of one we're going to get, but we're not going to get the totality of the eclipse, which is unfortunate, but that's right. It's just have to wait till next time.
It's a road trip close enough to go do it if you wanted to, though.
Yeah, but it keeps moving. I'm not that like.
Where do you have to go?
Like McKinney,
through Dallas. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, you'd have to get to East Texas. Would be the easiest place for us to get to.
But there's a lot of people that are, you know, chasing that eclipse right now and trying to figure it all out. There'll be pictures up. But
I'd like people that are like professional. Picture takers?
Yeah, eclipse watchers. Yeah, oh yeah. The
eclipse watchers.
Yeah, there's I mean, these...
It's
these,
a cool thing to see. When
these
you
towns,
get
these
the
towns where the totality is going to take place, their hotel rooms are booked up. But then it's kind of slid a little bit, and it changed slightly. And if it changes just slightly, then it could move like a complete town away from the town that everybody thinks it's going to be. I know. They have to get in their Winnebagos and, you know, ride down the road a little bit and see what they can see.
Speaking of chasing eclipses, I actually saw a really interesting video that I didn't know anything about beforehand. The 1970 eclipse that crossed Africa, because of it actually being near the equator, was the longest eclipse for any point for totality. Well, they actually had modified a Concorde so that it could fly in the shadow at Mach 1 point, whatever it was, to keep up with the shadow across so that they could study the sun. And they like drilled holes in the ceiling of it to put in special mirrors, special windows, so that you could do science experiments on the Concorde.
Oh, that's cool.
Through the roof looking at the eclipse. And it was an 8.5 minute eclipse. No, I'm sorry, 80 minute eclipse. It was supposed to be like 4 or 5 minutes, and they got 80 minutes of science experiments done while flying on the Concorde.
I missed the Concorde. I think
it was really expensive and really dangerous.
Well, but it just had the one, problem.
Oh, it had more than one.
But I mean, the one that we knew about, the big one.
It had more than one problem.
College basketball last night, Jamie. Iowa takes down LSU in the women's Elite Eight game to go to the Final Four. And so they win it 94-87. Caitlin Clark had a big night. Are you a fan of hers, or are you following her at all? Do you care?
I was very interested in the game. As I stated yesterday, you know, tremendous talent on both sides. Mm-hmm. Not really a fan of a lot of the people involved. Mm-hmm. A high level of respect for what they are as coaches or players on both sides. Not the talent level was just through the roof in that game. But I would tell you I was probably rooting for Iowa to win because LSU got Iowa last year, mm-hmm. but I really am I'm not a fan of either anybody involved, really.
Okay.
That's Clark kind of what I've said to you about women's college basketball right now. They're just not a lot of characters that are easy to root for.
41 for Clark last night. She went 13-29. Iowa with only 5 bench points of their 94 last night. 5.
Okay, well, their starters are good.
They had 3 and they had 3 in double figures and 1 with 8 last night. And then in the other semifinal, or the Elite Eight games going to the Final Four, UConn wins over USC 80-73. That game was played in Portland where they had the misaligned 3-point line. And USC went 9 of 29 from the 3-point line. They got it right. They fixed it. And UConn 7 of 15 from the 3-point line last night.
Okay.
I was trying to think, and I talked to my man Mark Finkner about this, and usually, man, he is usually Rain Man on these things in terms of being able to tell you what day of the week something was from the 2015 season and what the score was and all this kind of weird stuff. There was a game this past year, and I think it was in Vegas at the South Point Arena, where Coach Planette Pearson looked at the half-court line and said it was off. And I went back in my notes from the Thanksgiving Classic there in Vegas, and I couldn't find anything about it. But I remember a game, and it was on the road. We were somewhere, and maybe could have been in Austin, could have been Vegas, where the half-court line was just off just a skosh. And we were like, because I was like, okay, if this comes into play, I was going to have like a really good point. But it didn't come into play.
So the half-court line was not completely in the middle?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like that really would affect anything.
I know, but it would have been a good point, you know, like if the other team had scored one, like, that was a foot off, you know, that would have been a point that I would have.
So the other team didn't score one?
Nobody got one, but it was just, she noted that, and again, I can't remember which city we were in. There was one place, and I think it was Vegas, but I'm not certain on this, where it was either the half court, something was off just a little bit.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yeah, yeah.
Wherever the half court stripe is in Vegas, right. It stays in Vegas.
Yeah. Well, how about for Gino Auriemma and UConn, 15 of the last 16 years, they've gone to the Final Four.
It's pretty stinking impressive.
Yeah. So I'm kind of rooting for them to win it all because I'm thinking if they win it all this year, maybe Gino at 70 would go, hey, that's enough. I'm going to retire. And then UConn would slide back maybe a little bit.
So did you watch the LSU-Iowa game?
I did not.
You did not.
Okay. I was listening to you, and I was spending time with the lucky lady, and I might have fallen asleep during a little bit of the ball game, and then, but I caught the heavy parts of the ball game.
Of what?
Of your game, okay. And then of what we were watching on TV, although I missed the dramatic ending of one show and woke up in time to hear like the 8th and the 9th and the 10th and the 11th. But no, I didn't. I just kept track of the score. Kept an eyeball on it. So
the Morning Drive podcast from Double T 97.3 is presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction. Time now for Jamie's question of the day on Lubbock Sports Station, Double T 97.3.
All right, we've got a two-parter for you fine young gentlemen today in our listening audience, but your answers could be the same.
Okay. I mean, the two-parter question, the answers could be the same? Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Is there an echo in here?
I was just trying to clarify. I was just trying to understand that you were asking us two questions and the answer could be the same.
Yes.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay. I understand now. Okay. Man, sometimes
you basically word for word just repeated what I said.
I know, but I was just trying to clarify. I was just trying to understand that was the case.
Jeff has fallen asleep already. Okay, he's bored of my question.
Sorry, it's that sixth grade education that
I'm actually excited for the question now at this point, waiting to see what this is.
Okay, so I want you to look at the four new schools coming to the Big 12 Conference. Mm-hmm. I want you to tell me the one program, and that means a school with their sport.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
With their sport, okay.
That you think is the best for the Big 12 to add to the mix, to their whatever specific league they're in, the men's basketball league or the football league or the women's golf league, whatever.
Okay.
Okay? So which one you think it was best for them to add?
Mm-hmm.
And two, the second part is, which one do you think will have the most success?
Mm. I see that now. Okay.
So the answer could be the same.
Yes, I see that. I see that now, and I think mine is going to be the same.
Okay.
Okay. I'm just going to stick with hoops, and I think Arizona coming to the Big 12 is in basketball is going to be what best for them. Is that the best for the Big 12? Is that what you're...
Yeah, best for the conference.
Best for the conference.
Who you know, lifts up the respect level of the conference that they're in the mix?
Man, it's hard to lift it up any more than it already is. But I think I think Arizona injects some new blood, good blood, because I don't really think you're losing a whole lot with Texas and Oklahoma leaving from a basketball standpoint. But they were obviously very good this year. But I think Arizona will be superior to what Texas and Oklahoma were in the Big 12. And I think that will be their best sport, basketball, when they come to the Big 12. So I'm going to say Arizona and Arizona basketball for both.
Okay.
Okay, so while I don't know that their success will be what's biggest for the Big 12. Colorado football is going to bring eyeballs and a lot of eyeballs. It may only be for 3 or 4 weeks, but it's going to be bringing eyeballs and bringing attention. And no matter what you want to say about Deion, he's bringing attention with him to the Big 12. And in a conference where football is king across college football, any attention you can get is good attention to grab a hold of. So I'm going to go Colorado football is the most, I don't want to say important, it's going to bring the most attention. I think Arizona basketball is the best program for success in the Big 12 going forward.
What was the last one? I'm sorry.
Arizona basketball.
Okay. Arizona basketball this year, 27-9. 15-5 in conference play. So a pretty good season for them. Got to the, what, third round of the tournament? Is that right?
I believe so.
Yeah, lost to Clemson.
Yeah.
Lost to Clemson. Okay, so, you guys went the basketball route. I think football is king. I think football matters the most. I think Utah is a program that's been really good of late. And they're usually hanging inside the top 20. I feel like that's the program that's going to help this conference the most. You need kind of some big names losing Texas and Oklahoma as far as football goes. And you don't need more quality men's basketball teams. I mean, like you said, they already have a ton of credit and respect across the country. They may have lost a little with their performance in the NCAA tournament, but I don't think you need it as much as you need the big name that is Utah football right now. And so I think that was the best one to add to the mix for the conference. I think the program that's going to have the most success probably early on is Arizona baseball. I just think that's a really, really good baseball program. It feels like year in and year out. Now, they lost their head coach a couple years ago, and they've kind of taken a step back, but I just don't think that's going to last. I think their baseball program will, because right now it feels like the Big 12 Conference is wide open baseball-wise compared to basketball where it's not wide open. They're not going to be able to come in and immediately have a bunch of success with the Baylors and Kansases of the world hanging out there at the top and even the Red Raiders. I don't think it's going to be as easy. I think baseball is more wide open. I think Arizona baseball will have a better shot of being successful early on.
Okay. See, I thought you were going to go the Colorado route.
I agree with Jeff. I think he's going to bring a lot of hype. But I do think that if halfway through this season Colorado's bad again record wise, I think the Deion hype's just going to go away. People are going to be bored of it. As a matter of fact, I kind of feel like it's big portion of it already has. I mean, he was the biggest thing in college football at the beginning of last year after the first couple weeks, and then by the end of the season nobody was talking about it anymore.
Did you see who they brought on board to their staff? He's a first he was an analyst, and now once he discovered that he really couldn't be like a coach on the field very much, so he's quote enrolled in graduate school, but Warren Sapp is a graduate assistant for Colorado football.
Okay.
Apparently, according to some, he did pass a background check, even with his checkered past. Makes you wonder what the stipulations.
I'd like to know what would fail a background check now.
What was his past? I'm sorry, I totally missed his past.
He's
domestic abuse or something?
He's got several run-ins with the law.
Yeah, he's got some run-ins with the law.
Maybe there was some the wacky tobacky issues, maybe? Can't remember.
So he's a GA. 740, boom, boom, boom is next.
The Morning Drive podcast from Double T 97.3 is presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
Jamie Lent and Jeff McGuire. I'm Chuck Hines. Great to have you with us today on Lubbock Sports Station, Double T 97.3 and Double T 97.3.com. We'll have Red Raider baseball on the air for you today as we come to you from the First United Bank studio. 11:30, the broadcast time on both 100.7 The Score and Double T 97.3. Balls and strikes hit about noon today. Let me ask you this question, and this may not be the correct adjective, but it may be. Do you think this is a frustrating team for Coach Tadlock in that he sees so much talent or thinks he sees so much talent, but the execution of that talent sometimes hasn't yet clicked maybe on all cylinders for a consistent basis? And by that I mean, let's just say over a 3-game series.
I think that Coach Tadlock feels like they're a better team than their record shows. They're a better team than the way they've played at times. but I don't know about frustrated or not. Maybe that's the right word to use. I don't know. He never really expresses frustration to me.
He seems he's
pretty
even keel.
Yeah.
Duck on the top of the pond and might be paddling like hell underneath, but he's by all practical purposes, looks like he's got his wits about him, so to speak.
Yeah, but I would think that he feels like his team is capable of more.
Mm-hmm. And how do you get? I guess the million-dollar question is, how do you get to that point?
You keep working hard every day, and you know, trying to play the game the right way, and hopefully things will start to turn your way.
Start to click. Do you see signs of that, or do you see like? You feel like you see signs of that, and then you like take a step back listening, and it's like, or is it like pitch to pitch, where you're like, man, when are we going to play consistent?
Yeah, on the mound, I felt like you've progressed really nice, even though you didn't throw it well last night.
Mm-hmm.
But on the mound, I feel like you've done some of that, but I'm not necessarily seeing signs of that defensively or offensively. Mm-hmm. You still, again, going to the 11th last night, you were 1-for-6 with guys in scoring position. You ended up getting 2 hits to make it respectable, right?
Yep.
At 3-for-8, but it's really not, wasn't the case. You had the opportunity to put the game away early, and you just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Couldn't get a hit,
and then you kind of allowed them to get some extra outs as well, too, right?
Yeah, late in the contest, absolutely.
Both, you talked about this early on in the game yesterday, and I think we know this about Kevin Bazell. He went 3-for-5, 2 runs scored, had 4 RBI, had 2 two-run home runs last night. But you said at one point in time, I think early in the game, that 2 great college catchers, and then you look at the line that Malcolm Moore had for Stanford last night, 3-for-5, 2 RBI, 2 runs scored, walked once, struck out twice. But it's not so much even what both of them do offensively. It's what they both do defensively, too, right?
Yeah, Red Raiders weren't aggressive on the base paths last night, and I think some of that probably had something to do with Moore's ability to throw behind the plate, and I'd say the same thing about Stanford.
Yeah, and it feels like Kevin Bazell is kind of becoming the player that you thought he was going to be at the start of the season before his setback.
Yeah, I mean, he was playing well. He was hitting the ball well before he became ill and all that good stuff. So, he's back to, feels like he's back to playing like you expect him to play,
yeah.
Like the All-American that he is.
And Damian Bravo, after, getting the 5 hits in one game with against Central Florida, and then he had, a couple of games where he didn't get a hit. He
gets 0-for-9.
Yeah, he gets 3 last night and scores 3 runs himself and walks once, so a really good night for him. So between Bazell and Bravo, had over half your hits, 6 of the 11 last night. And
it's good that you put those guys next to each other in the lineup.
Yeah. probably a reason for that.
I think it's just both of them you want near the top of the lineup, so they're getting as many at-bats as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody says this off the Yates Flooring Center chat line. Seems like we only score on home runs. Pitching is not as strong as I thought.
Pitching was not great last night. But, again, Washburn gave up a couple of runs on a wind-blown home run. Rogers was not great last night, but his defense behind him was not great behind him. But I feel like the pitching has improved dramatically. I think the pitching is pitching well enough for you to win a bunch of games right now. Unfortunately, what the texter said in the first part of his text about the offense not scoring unless it's a home run, that's reality right now, and that has to change if you're going to make the postseason.
Somebody asked this earlier in about who would be available in the bullpen today. Is that a concern for today's game of who you're going to use, given that you've got Houston coming up Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or is that not a concern today?
I would guess it's a concern for both teams because you used guys last night.
Yeah.
So some guys are going to – maybe some guys that aren't used as much for both these squads are going to have to get in there and find a way to get some outs tonight.
Well, it would be good for Zach Erdman to go And if he could go 4 or 5 today, that would really be helpful, wouldn't it?
I was thinking 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
You gonna pat him on the back today and say, "Hey, you got 9 for us today, Zach?" Nope.
I don't think that's something that coach would say, but sure, you'd take it if he did it.
Yeah. No doubt. This from the Yates Flooring Center chat line. A little weak in the middle infield, but there is great potential there as well. They need time to mature. The question is, how much time? Hope they win today. I will be tuned in to Double T 97.3 today.
Yeah, it feels like TJ Pompey's settling in nicely over at second base, and he's improved defensively. Lopez is, feel like he's settled things down, but then there's been, going back to last weekend and now last night, there's been some questionable plays as well. And so you need to get that figured out, because playing shortstop and being strong in the middle is really, really important. Really important. And the sad part about it is last night we think about the struggles on defense, but you also had 2 great diving catches in the outfield that saved runs. So there were some plus plays defensively as well.
This has been the Morning Drive Podcast, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction. Check out our library of Double T 97.3 podcasts at DoubleT 97.3.com.